This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. British MP Joe Cox, a popular and progressive Labour Party representative, was brutally stabbed and shot to death on Thursday, shocking the world. Cox was in her North England constituency when the attack took place in broad daylight. Police are holding a suspect named Thomas Mayer, who reportedly has links to neo-Nazi groups in the U.S. The MP's murder comes in the context of heightened tensions over a highly anticipated referendum later this month over Britain's membership in the European Union. A British exit, or Brexit as it's being called, would have huge repercussions for the national and international economy. Campaigning on both sides of the issue had heated up, but Cox's murder has put everything on hold. My guest is Liam O'Hare. He's a journalist with RT, covering UK politics as well as issues of asylum and migration. He now joins us live from London. Welcome to the program, Liam.
Thank you. Pleasure to join you.
So first, tell us who Jo Cox was. I understand that she was very progressive. She was somebody who was really campaigning for the rights of migrants and people from, say, countries like Syria. She was also pro-Palestinian and generally a very progressive MP, right?
Absolutely. Jo Cox was a very new MP as well. She was only elected about a year ago in the last general election. She was very fresh to Parliament. But within that year that she was there, it seemed like she'd made a very big impression. She'd started up a group on Syria. She'd been involved in the Labour Friends of Palestine group, as you mentioned. And she seemed to be somebody who cared quite a lot about social justice, not just at home, but also issues of international justice and standing up for some of the real kind of underprivileged people across the world. So,
and she was very young, right?
Very well, comparatively for an MP, yes, 41 years old. But she was somebody who had a background in working with Oxfam, working in charities and NGOs as well on issues of international development. So she came from a background that was perhaps not quite your traditional MP, who a lot of MPs go straight from university into politics and into comms. But she came from a background that was rooted in international development and international justice. And she definitely took those credentials into Parliament with her.
And so she was also campaigning, among all of these other issues, for Britain to remain in the EU, as many Labour MPs are. It's reported, or eyewitnesses are saying, that the person who is suspected of murdering her, who is in custody, shouted "Britain first," which is a rallying cry for some in the Brexit group. How much do you know about the circumstances of her murder and what might have been related to the referendum?
What we do know is that this time in British politics is like no other, in the sense that there has been a mass hysteria driven up with regards to immigration, with regards to the fact that there's an argument put forward that Britain is full and at breaking point in terms of immigration. So there's been quite a toxic atmosphere in British politics, which actually leads some people to believe that this could well be linked, very sadly, to the death of Jo Cox, or I should say the murder of Jo Cox. Now, what we do know is that eyewitnesses have said that the man who committed the murder shouted Britain first as he did so. Now, this is a group, for those of you who don't know, is a group in the far-right fringes of British political life. They are neo-Nazi, they are anti-immigrant to the extreme, they are Islamophobic, and they are a group who have been driving this hysteria. So that is one thing. What we also know is that the man in question, Thomas Mayer, who has been arrested, has links to neo-Nazi groups in the United States. He previously bought, I think, some materials from a group in the United States called National Alliance, and also has links with a white supremacist magazine in South Africa, which is pro-apartheid. So although there's been no motive given yet by police, it seems evident, or it's starting to become evident, that this was definitely a political murder, and was essentially a fascist hate crime.
So we'll know in the, or possibly we might know in the coming days, whether Joe Cox's murder was directly related to the campaigning around the referendum. Regardless, the referendum itself is going full force. As you mentioned, it's a sort of a moment in UK politics like no other. So explain for our audience here on the other side of the pond, what British exit from the EU means. First of all, what led to this referendum in the first place? Britain's always sort of been a little uncomfortable with its membership, or certain elements in Britain have been uncomfortable for a very long time with its membership in the EU, right?
Absolutely. Well, the thing is, it's quite peculiar because there wasn't a great demand from the British public for this referendum. This referendum actually came about because of an internal wrangle within the Conservative Party, essentially, and the Conservatives had in their manifesto for the general election that they promised that they would hold a referendum. Now, that was mostly to offset a challenge from UKIP, which is a party further to the right, on immigration. So this was not an issue that was really deeply rooted in the British public were calling for, although you are right to say that people in Britain, certain quarters, particularly in the political establishment, have never been comfortable being an equal member within the European Union. And I think this goes back to a lot of people in Britain failing to recognise that Britain is no longer an empire, it's no longer an imperial power, and they struggle to accept that. And you can tell from a lot of rhetoric coming out of the referendum campaign that this still plays a serious factor. For instance, some of the people proposing a Brexit say that they want to stop immigration from Europe, but would be happier to increase immigration from the Commonwealth countries, which is the old countries of the British Empire. So it's quite a peculiar narrative that's been played out across this whole debate. But largely what it's been fueled by is a sense, is an anti-immigrant argument that's been fueled by the political class for a number of years, often as an excuse for the failing public services that have happened as due to years of austerity that Britain's had. And it's also been fueled by the British media, which is over a past number of years scapegoated immigrants again in quite a shameful manner. So
is there the sense that if Britain were to leave the EU, that somehow the British economy would work for British citizens first and foremost? Is that the impression that, that people who support Brexit have?
The economy is obviously a major issue in this. But it's mostly about the language and the rhetoric that's used is mostly about taking back control, whether that be control of the borders, whether that be control of some of the laws which have been outsourced to the EU, or whether that be control, like you say, of the economy. But when you look at the issue, and in terms of any of the serious economists, whether they be people from the Bank of England, whether they be left-wing economists right across the political spectrum, have said that a Brexit would be economically damaging to the UK and would lead to years of uncertainty. So it's not so much an economic case that's driving this, it's more a case of nationalism. It's an appeal to nationalism, it's an appeal to people's core instincts, if you like, which is quite sad, but which seems to be the case with this referendum.
So is that then fair to say that there isn't specifically a left-right split that you don't really have? I mean, you know, is there sort of one broad part of the spectrum that is for Brexit and another broad part of the spectrum that's against? Or is it sort of a mixed bag?
I think in terms of the Remain campaign, it's a mixed bag in the sense that you've got from the Prime Minister David Cameron to the Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn, who's on the radical left, united on this. So in that sense, the Remain campaign has quite a mixed group supporting staying in the European Union. Now, there is a left-wing case for Brexit, which looks at issues such as in what's happened to Greece and the conditions they were put under and the handcuffs that were put on Greece economically. And that argues that the EU as an institution cannot be reformed, and you cannot actually create socialism, if you like, or more socialist policies within the confines of the EU. But this is quite a marginal group within the debate, and it's quite a marginal voice. And in actual fact, the debate and the voice, like I say, is being led on a current of anti-immigrant sentiment about taking back our borders in the midst of the refugee crisis, etc., etc. And just to highlight one point about this was only a couple of hours before Joe Cox was killed yesterday, was murdered, Nigel Farage, the leader of UKIP and one of the main protagonists of the Leave campaign, launched a massive poster which had an image of thousands of refugees and said breaking point across it. So just to give you an idea of the type of rhetoric that has been used in this this thing. So when you've got those type of images being used, then it is not so surprising that perhaps it has led to somebody breaking, as we've seen in the case of this man who assaulted Joe Cox.
How many refugees have entered the UK, though? I mean, from where we, you know, from where I sit, most of the news that we cover, it seems as though countries like Greece and Italy have been the kind of flashpoints, or epicenters, rather, of refugee migration. How deeply is the UK impacted, at least thus far, by the refugee crisis?
Like you say, comparatively, the UK has not had a massive intake of refugees. And in fact, the UK has actually failed to take what was recommended in terms of the number of refugees that was recommended by the European Union to take in as a minimum from the crisis in Syria. So the UK has not actually been, the ideas that the UK has been swamped by immigrants has not actually hold any weight in reality. But what the big issue that people have been talking about is EU migration, and is the fact because you've got freedom of movement across the European Union, which in my opinion, and a lot of people's opinion, is one of the best things about the European Union, is actually what's been held up against it. And the fact that you do have people on the borders of Calais seeking to get into Britain, these images have been drummed up to create a climate of fear and hysteria. But like I say, they're not actually met with the facts, and the facts are that Britain in actual fact has not been affected on anywhere near the same scale to Italy or to Greece, where they are actually taking in a large number of migrants.
You mentioned Nigel Farage, the head of the UKIP party. I understand just a day before Joe Cox's murder, he led a bizarre flotilla of boats on the Thames to make his case for Brexit. What was going on there? Was it just a giant sort of media photo stunt?
Well, like I said, I think this almost goes back to some kind of ideas of Imperial and Britannia ruling the waves when you have Nigel Farage and his band of Brexiters floating down the Thames in their boats, asking to let Britain sail off into the sunset in some kind of imperial paradise. It's quite absurd. And to be honest, most people in Britain are looking at it and thinking, what the hell is going on here? And in actual fact, I then had the Remain campaign led by Bob Geldof, the singer, staging some kind of battle against Nigel Farage's boat. The fact is, this campaign is not rooted in the everyday struggles and lives of people in the UK. It's a campaign and a referendum that's been forced upon people in Britain by a Conservative Party, which is tearing itself apart at the seams. And in actual fact, it's a campaign because of a lot of resentment within the British working class to do with social and economic issues, that it's feeding anger within that. And that's why you're seeing quite a reactionary movement towards Brexit. Mm. But like I say, a lot of people in the UK are not only quite surprised and shocked by what's going on, but also quite disturbed by the route that Britain is taking at this current juncture.
Now, I'm looking at polls of the referendum, and it looks like the yes and no votes are neck and neck, 45% for wanting to remain in Britain, 45% to leave, with those 10% undecided. However, the campaigning has been put on hold since Joe Cox's murder. Do you have any sense that the referendum will go forward as planned on June 23rd, or is this sort of a moment of reckoning after this shocking development with the murder of Joe Cox?
I think the referendum is certain to go ahead. I don't think there's any danger of being called off. I think campaigns have been called off until Monday, out of respect, which I think is absolutely the right thing to do. I think the referendum will go ahead. Whether this will have an effect on it, I'm not sure. I think in some ways, perhaps it's too soon to speculate on that. But I think if out of such a tragedy like this one, if there's anything of significance that could come out of it, I think it perhaps would be that we look at some of the rhetoric that's been used in this debate, and actually there's a reconsideration in British politics of the way this debate's been conducted, because from my perspective, it is the worst conducted debate in terms of aggression and anger and scapegoating that I've ever seen take place in British politics.
And Liam, it was just a couple of years ago that there was a referendum in Scotland over Scottish independence from the UK, and that narrowly lost. That was sort of seen as an anti-imperialist move to try to, you know, leave the United Kingdom. But I think those, it's probably comparing apples and oranges, right, in the Scottish independence referendum versus the British referendum from the EU?
Yeah, very, very different circumstances. Very different, but they are linked in the sense that a second referendum on Scottish independence could actually be a consequence of a Brexit, because Scotland is very much more pro-EU than the rest of the UK. Scotland is certain to vote, I think, by about 60%, perhaps 65%, to stay within the European Union. So if Scotland is dragged out of the EU against its will, against the will of the people, then the SNP and Nicola Sturgeon, Scotland's First Minister, has said that it is almost likely that they will call a second referendum. And I expect that second referendum to vote yes. So in actual fact, if Britain votes to leave the European Union, it could actually, as a consequence, break up the union of the United Kingdom. And I think that would almost be an inevitability, to be honest.
Wow. Well, a very, very tumultuous time in politics for you. I want to thank you so much for spending this time with us and sharing your insight and helping us understand what's happening. Thanks so much, Liam.
Pleasure, guys. Thanks for having us.
Liam O'Hare is a journalist with RT covering UK politics and issues of asylum and migration. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.